You're probably a Boston cream kind of guy.
Hey, I have a question for you.
I'm supposed to do the sponsor tag right now, but go ahead.
The thing is that we're doing this podcast at 9 p.m. on Sunday night, and Yellowstone just dropped season four.
Yeah, I know.
Do you think I can do this podcast while watching it at the same time?
Well, let me tell you. We're going to read some emails later on, finally.
Okay.
And not just emails, but comments. So not just questions, but comments.
Okay.
And this winks at something that Jason from Victoria sent us. I'll read it to you. Love Jeff's plug about Amel cutting Elliot's keyboard tapping. Made me think of the times Elliot was clearly eating, making food, or coffee while talking. So do I think you can do it? Yes, because anyone that's either heard you here on this podcast or who heard you on my radio show daily knows that when I speak, generally you tune out and do something else. And you'll hear a couple of words here and there that'll be trigger words for you where you'll jump in and say, "Oh, I guess Jeff was mentioning that." And regardless of what I just said, you'll just go on and pontificate based on a series of words or maybe just one word that you heard. So do I think you can do it? Yes, because Elliot, you've done it before.
It's that obvious, eh?
Oh, dude, man, this is like a cantaloupe right down the middle. This is like a slow hanging curveball you take out of the yard. The pitcher just nods and asks for the ball from the umpire before it even goes over the left field wall.
This is all BX's fault because he's the one who told me about Yellowstone, and I binge watched it last season and loved it.
I loved BX dropping in on you guys last night. That was
Yeah, that was well
hilarious.
done. That
That was
was
so good.
that was very well done.
Okay, tag time. 32 Thoughts, the podcast presented by the all-new GMC AT4 lineup. As we mentioned, some emails coming up a little bit later on the program. We've been negligent. I'm a bad host. Blame it on me. But one of the
Yes,
things that
blame it on Jeff.
blame it on the rain and blame it on Merrick. Let's start with Chicago and the news on Saturday afternoon. Jeremy Culleton and his staff outside of Mark Crawford dismissed as head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks. Derek King takes over on an interim capacity. He gets called up from Rockford that night as well. Rockford has their season opener. And with that, by the way, Sheldon Keefe becomes the youngest coach in the NHL at 41. Your thoughts on Jeremy Culleton and what happened there? Before we get to Derek King and what's next, your thoughts on Jeremy Culleton, who I think all of us realize and accept was put in a really difficult position right from the get-go.
I didn't realize either. It was 3 years to the day that Joel Quenneville got fired that Jeremy Culleton was fired. Somebody
Yeah.
pointed that out to me, and it surprised me. You know, nobody believed in Jeremy Culleton more than Stan Bowman. And the moment that Stan Bowman was out, it was only a matter of time.
Did you watch the Winnipeg game on Friday?
Yeah.
Pretty obvious, right? Like the 5-1 score was generous to the Hawks. That was not a 5-1 game. That really was much worse than 5-1. You could tell, like, this team was flat, flat, flat.
Like, I don't like it when people say, "I don't want to be the person who replaces this enormously successful individual. I want to be the person who replaces the person who tried to replace the enormously successful individual." Do you understand what I'm saying
I
here?
do. I know you don't like it because we've had this conversation before. I know you don't like it, but can you understand it?
I understand it, but I think it's loser thinking.
I
Like, I
know.
really think it's loser thinking. I don't like it at all. In broadcasting, sometimes I hear, like, when there's a really successful host or a really successful analyst or someone who's really successful at a certain job, I've had people tell me, "Well, I don't want to replace that person, because nobody's going to like me, but I want to replace the person who goes in who fails."
That's what I'm
I
talking.
hate that. I hate
I know
it.
you don't like that talk, but you can at least appreciate that there is some wisdom there.
No, I
You know,
no, I don't.
the old saying, the history doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes.
Yeah.
Generally, this is the outcome, Elliot. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it just because it's hard. I've never believed in that, and I'm with you there.
Yeah.
But history does show us that this is an incredibly difficult thing to pull off, no matter what industry you're in.
Yes. Okay. You know what? just for the sake of the podcast and we can move on, I will concede this point to you, but I still hate it and disagree with
Mark that, Amel. He conceded a point to me. Let's mark that and move on.
I just think that Culleton, like the GM believed in him. Bowman stood by him. Mm-hmm. And this year, before the investigative report dropped, I don't believe that Chicago was looking to fire Culleton. Even though they got off to a terrible start, I still believe Bowman was supporting Culleton and was determined not to fire him. And then obviously comes the report, Stan Bowman is out, and his biggest fan in the organization was gone. And you looked at the way they played, and I just think that without his biggest backer there, Culleton was naked, and it was time to do something else.
Derek King goes in.
Yoda.
Interim head coach Yoda goes in.
I remember the Maple Leafs used to put like a little Yoda,
yes,
Yoda figurine in his stall.
He had a really good shot, Derek King did.
Yeah.
A really good shooter.
Good player.
He comes in from Rockford to take over on an interim capacity.
Yep.
The general manager is also in on an interim basis, and that is Kyle Davidson.
Yep.
I think a lot of us are trying to figure out a few things here. One, is Kyle Davidson going to be the guy long-term,
mm-hmm,
with the Chicago Blackhawks? And if so, whenever there's a new general manager, you try to get a feel for their style, how they, mm-hmm, do things, where their defaults are in times of strain. I don't know that we can really read much into this one. This is the, you know what, we need someone up here fast, and we have a AHL affiliate in Rockford for a reason. Here comes Derek King. Not to take anything away from Derek King, the head coach. You know, we hope for his sake he's incredibly successful with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into Derek King, does this tell you anything about Kyle Davidson and his position and his standing with the Hawks right now? This is a big move.
Did you watch the press conference on Sunday?
I did not.
Okay, so I didn't realize there was one going on, and I kind of rushed on to watch it, and then I read some of the quotes. First of all, Derek King's going to coach the rest of the year, right?
Yep.
So that's the number one piece of information that we learned. The second thing that, I don't know if we learned it, but we were certainly left an impression of it, is that Kyle Davidson's going to get some runway here. It doesn't sound like they're in a rush to hire a new general manager. Again, I want to say this is just me thinking, okay? I'm not saying it. I'm not reporting it. It's just me thinking it. The Chicago organization, because of everything that's happened on and off the ice, is very clear to me. And we now know they're engaged in settlement talks, and they will continue in settlement talks with Kyle Beach. This is an organization that is going to have to make a lot of decisions about its future. And I wonder if Davidson is being given an audition for the job.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think you know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
But my comment to that is, why not? Like, you have someone in here who's a new face, a new voice, someone we assume who comes in with new ideas, a new vision, maybe a new direction. I don't know. But my answer to that would be, well, why not? If he can do the job, why not? Which is not to say that you can't bring in someone to work in concert with him and establish, you know, former veteran general manager or a supercharged team president that can be more of a new face for the organization. But I do like that thinking. I always like the thinking when there's someone new to give them a real shot at it and give them a chance. And to your point, give them some runway.
So I'm going to credit Ben Pope, who works for the Chicago Sun-Times, because I'm actually reading the quotes from his article, because I wanted to make sure I quoted Kyle Davidson accurately. He said that the CEO, Danny Wirtz, has handed him full autonomy and authority to act as he sees fit. As I continue to evaluate and I get exposed to the different aspects of the organization, there's definitely going to be some changes. I have strong opinions on how certain things should run, how certain things should operate. And then he also says, we're going to learn a lot. I'm going to learn a lot in terms of what we see over the next weeks and months. We can decide what direction we want to take at that time. So you tell me if you think I'm wrong here, but this sounds like a person who believes he's in the pilot seat.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds like a person who expects to be making major decisions. You know, let's look at the roster.
Hang on one sec. Let me throw one thing in here.
Yeah.
It was pretty obvious to everybody that in Stan Bowman's mind, the rebuild was over.
Mm-hmm.
And then the start of the season happened. And everyone said, maybe the rebuild shouldn't be over. And maybe even though we thought we took a step forward, maybe we should reset this again. And as much as there's going to be a lot of change in this organization, maybe players need to be part of it as well.
Well, the number one guy I think of is Fleury.
Yep.
And this is the Vezina Trophy winner from last year, who's off to a rough start this year. And part of the reason is that the Blackhawks just bleed chances. They absolutely bleed chances. But I think teams are going to look at Fleury and just say, he's better than this. Like, at some point in time, I think there's going to be a market for him this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing that comes to mind. But Davidson seems to me, he's talking like a guy who believes he's going to have the ability to make major decisions.
Well, to me, the major decision is, did we make a mistake thinking the rebuild was over? And if so, what do we do about it? Like, isn't that the major decision right now with the Chicago Blackhawks? Did we not make a mistake here?
Whether you did or you didn't, there's certain players that you're not moving, right?
Correct.
I think you're probably deciding who you absolutely have to keep.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are you doing around them?
Mm-hmm.
Strome.
See, that's what I wonder about. Now that Culleton's gone, Bowman's gone, does that change his standing in the organization?
Well, the game's going on right now. It's 1-1 late in the third period, and I've got it on my television.
3 minutes left.
Strome tonight is a little over 12 minutes. I guess we watch and see. But anyway, I think the organization has to make a lot of decisions on and off the ice about what it's going to do to fix the brand. So when they say we might wait until next year to do some things,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's just deciding on a new coach. I think this is going to be a year for Chicago of top to bottom. We're going to be doing a lot of new things.
So you think this is a full audit of the organization?
Absolutely it is.
The logo.
I've wondered about the logo.
The statues.
I've wondered about the statues.
The ambassadors.
I've wondered about that.
How proactively do you change your organization?
It could be a lot.
I think that would be well received.
There was a game they had recently. It was our hometown hockey game last Monday, Ottawa. They won that game 5-1.
5-1, yeah.
I just heard the gate that night was extremely low. We all know coming out of COVID, there's some issues, but fans speak, right?
Yeah.
And that was a night I heard that the organization looked internally and said, fans are speaking, and we know what they're saying.
Okay, let's park the Hawks talk here, although this will continue all season long. A couple of things that are out there of recent note. The Ottawa Senators calling up Eric Brandstrom.
Yep.
My initial thought was showcase
mm-hmm.
for the player. Hawks just won, by the way.
They did? Like, my thing is, like, backwards.
Sorry, I cut something wrong.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Merrick just did something that gets you fined.
That gets you fine. No, we're going into overtime, actually. I just looked up at the screen, and I saw a Hawks celebration in the corner, and it was for a previous goal.
If that happens while we're watching games, whether live or in the room where we view games at hockey night.
Yeah, I know.
You get fined or you buy dinner or something like that. You cannot look at a replay and say, oh, they just won in overtime or something like
that. Hold on a second here. It's not like I showed up to a podcast 25 minutes late or anything, Elliot.
I had a good excuse.
You did have a good excuse. We're not going to share it on the air.
We're not telling everybody what that excuse was.
It was an excellent excuse, so well done.
Oh, by the way, I did want to say thanks to all the people who tweeted that the tease on Jack Eichel on Saturday night, the fun little ending, was good. I'm glad people liked it.
Yeah, that was excellent.
The Home Alone picture.
Okay, hang on. Hawks just won.
Yeah.
I'm right.
No, you were not right.
I was right.
Central Division rivals, the Nashville Predators, 2-1.
Well, congratulations to Derek King.
First.
You had a premonition.
Yeah.
You're a psychic.
Ooh, DeBrincat.
That's a big one for him. So anyway, well, the camera guys were doing a great job of setting up. Oh, I did credit the camera guys last time, and they only get credit once. They don't get credit twice.
Oh, geez, tough crowd.
But while they were setting up, I was doing a radio hit. And I had to walk off into the side, and that picture was there. He tried to hide it, I guess.
Oh, that's
and it was right there. And I said, there is no way you are getting away without explaining this.
That's fantastic. A quick thing on Eichel. I mentioned this on Saturday. He's in Vegas now. Did you see the reception he got, first of all?
Oh, yeah. I saw him getting interviewed by Millard, too.
True Vegas fashion as the limo pulls up. It is completely Vegas, and it's beautiful. So he's in Vegas now. He's deciding on his course of care this week. We all know he's getting the artificial disc replacement. He's just sort of figuring out when he's going to get it done and who's going to do the surgery. So
yep.
That'll all get taken care of, maybe even by the time you listen to this podcast. I mentioned Erik Brännström a couple of seconds ago before we detoured again to the Hawks and then Jack Eichel. Let's go back to Ottawa here. Erik Brännström called up by the Ottawa Senators. My first thought on that was showcase, but should it be my first thought in your estimation?
Well, if you saw the Senators tweet, which came out just before we did this podcast, I guess they have a COVID issue, right?
Yep.
Nick Holden and their assistant coach, Jack Capuano, are both in the protocol. So Brännström was called up to play. I mean, look, it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, Brännström has switched agents. And as we've talked about many times, when you switch an agent, it's not because you want nothing to happen, right? So, you know, this is an important time for him. I have no doubt teams are going to be watching him. But the Senators haven't played well defensively. There's going to be an opportunity for him. So another GM, when I mentioned in one of the notes a couple of weeks ago that Brännström was potentially available, another GM told me that there were some teams that reached out to Ottawa about him in the summer. But he admitted that he'd heard they were low balls, and Pierre Dorion was like, no, I'm not letting myself get lowballed here. Like, this is still a very good player. So this is a big opportunity for him. And to be honest, they could really use him.
Mm-hmm.
They have a defense pair that looks really good, and then they're really struggling behind them. You know, Shabbat and Zub is your top pair, and then they're really struggling behind them. So it's an opportunity for Brännström. They need some help back there, and he's talented enough to give it.
A couple of thoughts from what we saw on the weekend. I don't know what more we can say about Connor McDavid.
Barry wired that. All right, off the bar. Here comes McDavid. Back end. What can you say?
That is absolutely outstanding. The pressure, the bar by Barry as he pinches in. And Connor McDavid's got to wait here. He wants to drive it right back into the zone. He looks up, he waits, he waits, he waits, and then he puts the Jets on. Look at this. Talk about stick handling in the phone booth. What a move around Georgiev to finish it off on the biggest night this year with number four going to the Raptors. You just knew that Connor McDavid was going to make a statement. What a goal.
Not necessarily just the fact that he was able to pull it off, but I don't know many players that would look at four players in front of them and say to himself, I'm going to dance all four of them. I'm going to go right down Main Street.
Yeah.
Just that thought even enters your mind as something that you think you can potentially do. Like, honestly, Elliot, after we saw the goal and we all, whoa, like it's spectacular. At what point did you think to yourself, that's a decision he made? Like he looked up and saw that and still said, this is low percentage for almost everybody in the NHL, except for me. I'm going to try this. Because this is how we play hockey on the planet that I come from. What did you make of the McDavid move on Friday?
Well, first of all, the best line I heard about it was, he looks at them and he says, oh, there's only four of them. It's not like there's five.
Yeah.
The number one thing that stood out to me was his reaction after he scored.
He looked surprised.
You know what? I think it's more like he thinks this team can win. And I think it's taken him to another level. McDavid to me is a bad liar because his body and his tone gives away a lot of what he's thinking. And I see a guy this year who believes his team can win. And I think it's only made him even more determined to be better. Mm. He's got a high standard for himself. He demands a lot of himself. And now that he thinks his team is good enough to win, I think he's demanding even more. And the celebration after he scored that goal, I could be totally reading this wrong because I do tend to overthink these things. But I see a guy who was so excited because A, it was a great goal, and B, it's a goal his team absolutely needed, and C, he thinks that this team can win. Because in the past, we've seen him score some big goals.
Hang on, but you know what the feeling was, Elliot, in the past? And you could see that Connor would sense it and it would put extra pressure on him. Was, you know, there were some of those Oilers teams that just waited for Connor to save every game.
Yeah.
To do something. Connor, we're going to play 50-50 puck out there and then just take our chances that Connor's going to win this thing for us. Like, how long did that go on at Edmonton, that vibe? For quite a while. Connor's just going to save us. Don't worry. Connor's just going to save us. It's different now in Edmonton.
It is different now. I do think they're going to go out to add.
Mm-hmm.
I do. It's just a matter of when. I think they're going to look at another goalie,
mm-hmm.
just depending on everything holds up. And I think they could look at a left shot D. But he looks up and down and around, and he says, this team is good enough to win. And I think that takes him to another level. So a couple of things about that goal. Someone compared it to a slalom skier. The best slalom skier goes down the hill. Their head never moves.
Mm-hmm.
Watch McDavid's head. It never moves. He's going in and out. Never moves. And the thing he said in the post game about,
I'm paid to score big goals and I'm paid to do that type of stuff. And you know, it's just, you know, just doing my job. I thought.
It's hilarious.
First of all, I love that quote. And you know where I first heard it? One of my favorite comedians is Chris Rock.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And he had this bit about being praised because you're a good father.
Supposed to be a good father.
You're right. You're supposed. Why should you be praised because you're a good father? You shouldn't be praised because you're a good father. You're supposed to be a good father. I love that line. I feel that way when it comes to my job, my parentage, everything. Like, why should I get praised for that? I'm supposed to be good at that. You're paid to do a job. You do the job. I love that McDavid said that. You know which record I want to see him go for?
What's that?
51 games with a point to start the season. Gretzky.
Could do it.
That's the one I want to see this year.
He could totally do it. I mean, he's on a pace now to shatter salary cap scoring records.
Yep.
To shatter salary cap scoring records, which is a caveat we have to throw into a lot of these things. A couple more things from around the NHL before we get into some emails.
Okay.
Is everything now fine in Leafland? They beat the Boston Bruins on Saturday night, 5-2. Marner looks good again, you know, 11 points in his last five games. Everything okay now in Toronto, Elliot?
You know what was the best thing that ever happened to the Maple Leafs? The Amazon show.
The best? Do you think that was the best thing now? It used to be the worst thing.
Because people were getting mad at me when I said they got ruined by Amazon. So now I'm just going the other way. It's opposite day.
It was a stroke of genius, whoever greenlighted that. It's brilliant. Look at the results. Ignore the beginning of the season.
I do think now that this is proof that I think Matthews is the best player. I think the offense goes through Marner because he's the distributor and he is the facilitator. When he is not himself,
yeah,
the offense just dies with him.
He's the dealer.
Yeah, he's the dealer.
He's the dealer, man.
I just feel that when he is not going, the offense is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's going in confident, the offense rises. And I think because of his role and the way he plays and all that, and he's the guy who sets up Tavares and Matthews, I still think Matthews is the best player, but I think Marner determines the offense.
One final thing here before we get to emails that you mentioned on Saturday, which has raised a couple of eyebrows, St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
Asking for COVID cap relief and getting rejected. What can you tell us?
They're going through a situation. Obviously, they're fully vaxxed. We're down to one unvaccinated player. And there have been a number of teams that have stepped up and said, look, we're vaccinated. So if we go through something and we're shorthanded, can we get relief? And I think it should be done. I think they should do it. I've said, even if they want to just use it as a bonus overage and take it off the cap next year, they should do it.
Next year, yeah.
But the league won't do it. And the Blues asked for COVID relief last week, and they didn't get it. And one of the reasons is that they wanted to call up Scott Perunovic, who is lighting it up in the American Hockey League. He is off to an incredible start, and they can't get him up there because his bonuses were too high. So they were very upset. And a lot of teams are upset about this. And there have been some talks, and some teams have said it, and I think the league has said it. Why are we testing as often as we are for vaccinated players? Basically, you get tested every 72 hours. And one of the things they decided to do, because a number of the doctors were against it, they said, look, if you don't want canceled games, you have to keep testing as often as we are. And if you want to go to the Olympics, which admittedly some don't want, but the players really want, you have to keep testing as often as you are. And it was tough to explain last night on the air, but I have the exact note right here. I'm just reading it right now. Is that one of the issues was there's an expedited procedure to confirm positives to make sure that they are accurate and not false positives. So basically, the false positives are in the lab-based PCR testing. So what tests they're going to use more often now are called MESA tests, MESA point-of-care tests. They're at club facilities in the U.S., and they have improved their accuracy. Similar options are being explored for Canadian clubs.
Hmm.
So that's what they're looking at. Because one of the things that they said was that people were upset about this whole system were saying is that there were too many false positives. So is there a way we can fix those or address those quicker? Now, I will say this, Jeff, the NBA sent out a note. It was reported on Sunday morning that they are recommending boosters for players, coaches, and referees. I'm curious to see what this is going to mean for the NHL. I had heard that, you know, it was, they got everybody vaccinated but one guy, but I know they were nervous about, okay, what happens if we try to do boosters?
Story to follow. Elliot, let's take a quick break, come back, and finally get to some emails on 32 Thoughts, the podcast.
Tonight, a smoky break for our ThoughtLine partner, Montana's Barbecue and Bar. With meats prepared and smoked in-house, it's no wonder why they're Canada's home for barbecue.
Check them out, and as Elliot always says...
Try the ribs.
Yes, their ribs are smoked in-house every day until they fall off the bone. And don't forget, Montana's has all-you-can-eat ribs every Wednesday.
Head on down to Montana's Barbecue and Bar and take the All-You-Can-Eat Rib Challenge every Wednesday. Smoking good barbecue only at Montana's. Some conditions apply. Visit montanas.ca for details.
All right, welcome back to the podcast here. Elliot, you know what's hot? You know what's alive? You know what's happening right now?
What's that?
The Thought Line.
All right.
Open for business. Call us up. Leave your thoughts, your takes.
And just remember, not 2 minutes long.
Elliot likes them short and snappy. Yes. Emil would appreciate not having to edit the calls, but nonetheless, the thought line is open, 1-833-311-3232. I don't have a snappy way to say this or sing this or rhyme this, so here it is, as ham-fisted as it might be, 1-833-311-3232. 3232. It is the thought line. Call up, leave your questions, your takes, your thoughts, and the better ones will get played here. That is our promise to you. And by the way, Elliot's paying for all of it. So don't worry about the tolls. Elliot's picking up the tab. Thanks, Dad. 32thoughts at sportsnet.ca is the email address. Let's get to some right now. From Nicholas. You referenced Connor McDavid earlier, Elliot. This one is about Connor McDavid. Is there or can there be an argument made for McDavid to be one of the best athletes in sports after seeing his 1v4 spectacular? It's on ice, not on the ground, which makes you have to be more athletic. One of the best athletes in sports, Connor McDavid, to which Elliot Friedman says what?
Absolutely. And we talked about it earlier, about how his head didn't move. But the other thing we showed on Saturday night was you do this on the ice and you can do it all also on the track. And Matt Nichol was kind enough to send me some video from a few years at the BioSteel camp where there's a 20-meter dash and at 10 meters, a light comes on. You have to go either right or left. How quickly can you change your direction and do it properly? And he's the best at it. It's the combination of being naturally gifted and working at it, and working at it to a high level. He's a phenomenal athlete. Phenomenal.
When that type of work rate meets that type of athleticism, that's what you can get.
Look at that goal against Columbus a few years ago. Like, just people flailing around on the ice, and he's completely in control.
Well done. Off to Jordan Eberle, and now through the neutral zone comes Connor McDavid. Double team, got it back. Wrist shot, score! What a beautiful move! Deep backhand, went back to the forehand, and welcome back, Connor. Time of the goal, 9:58, 2-1 Edmonton.
You know how hard that is?
To me, the one against the Maple Leafs, one against, you know, unfortunately, Riley. Morgan Riley, where he looks like he's playing basketball. Like, isn't that, I mean, you're more of a basketball guy than me. Isn't that like a basketball cut?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he looked like he was playing basketball.
Morgan Riley back. McDavid beat him. Wrist shot, score. Beautiful move. Connor McDavid danced around Morgan Riley and then finishes off the Leafs.
It was spectacular. Okay, here's a comment from Chuck in Baxter, Minnesota about Jack Eichel. Listen to this. This is interesting. I'm very happy for Jack Eichel. Based on what I've read, I suffered a similar injury. I'm older than dirt, 60. Hey, we're not that far off, but watch what you say about being older than dirt.
Seriously.
But I still love playing competitive hockey. I had the disc replacement surgery instead for many of the same non-hockey reasons articulated by Jack. Jack, I sincerely hope you find the procedure as life-changing and successful as my disc replacement surgery was for me. I noticed the positive results within hours and resumed all my activities between 3 to 4 weeks. So Saturday afternoon, I spent a good chunk of time talking to Chris Weidman, UFC fighter.
Yeah, not the hockey player, the UFC fighter. Yeah.
Correct. So I just wanted to get a sense of what, you know, what Eichel is looking at here, because listen, most doctors, you know, you do your research online, most doctors, and doctors tend to be conservative. It's their nature and you understand it. But generally, they talk about 5 to 6 months on recovery. And when you spoke to Eichel, you know, he had mentioned 3 months and also mentioned he had talked to Chris Weidman.
Yeah.
And, you know, Weidman's recovery was 3 months. Jack's 25 years old. He's in wonderful shape, elite level athlete. We know that certainly helps when you're recovering. But I asked Weidman, you know, what it was like for him. And he said after surgery right away, you know, to Chuck's point here, felt great. He said almost all of his strength came back and came back quickly. I asked him about his rehab and he said he was back to 100% with zero neck issues, 8 to 12 weeks. And he went from light to heavy workouts between 6 to 8 weeks. So there's that 8 to 12, you know, that Eichel referenced with you and that, you know, a lot of people in Vegas have their fingers crossed about, because all of a sudden that changes things for the Vegas Golden Knights if Jack Eichel can come back in 3 months. I'm not a doctor. I just play one on television, podcasts, and radio. It does seem ambitious to me, but that's one scenario from one of the most high-profile athletes that's had this type of surgery.
Let me add a little bit to that. Like, we joke about how we ignore each other and type and send tweets while the other guy's talking. I just did that while you were talking.
Who were you just texting?
Well, I got a direct message on Sunday from an individual, and I've reached out to him because I want to talk to him on Monday. He is a former goalie, and not at a high level, but, you know, guy who played goal. And he had a disc replacement done in 2011, and he blogged about it. And after he had his disc replacement, his pain and issues were much better, and he got back to playing beer league goaltending. And I want to talk to him about it. Obviously, that's not the same as what Jack Eichel is going to try to do.
Yeah.
But he did it. He blogged about it. He sent me the link. I read through his blog online. I hope to talk to him, and I'll link to it in the blog if I get it done. But, you know, I just think it was really interesting. I've learned so much in this process, you know, about this, and I'm rooting for Eichel. But the main reason I'm rooting for him is that if he turns out to be right in this, and clearly he's done his research, it's going to be a breakthrough medically for a lot of people.
Hang on. I was hoping you got us there, because I was going to ask you, Doug, how much of a game changer could this one be? And what are the effects of this? Because this really has been an enormous story that has, you know, a lot of different layers to it, whether it's, you know, players being in charge of their own care and why they're not, and whether that will be a negotiation even before the CBA expires. This will now be more commonplace if it's successful for other athletes in hockey to do the same thing. Like, Jack's the first here. Let's never lose sight of this. Like, Jack Eichel is the first person to do that. It does bring along with it some risks, because there isn't a historical precedent for anyone in the NHL, but also this could open the door for a lot of other athletes in hockey, Elliot.
And that's why I want it to work. What I've learned about spinal fusion, and I want to thank everybody who sent me direct messages about this, pro or con, because there's a lot of you who, especially after we had Dr. Prusmak on the podcast, who sent notes about your experiences with ADR or spinal fusion. Mm-hmm. And it just sounds to me like if this ADR works, and it's worked for a lot of other places around the world, just for a lot of people, it's going to make their life better. And for a lot of athletes, it's going to make their chances of coming back from injury better. That's why I want this to work. Mm. I really want this to work. For Eichel and for anyone else who's looking into spinal fusion and saying, at his age, and saying, I'm not crazy about this, and I'm glad there's another option available.
Here's another email, and Eichel is referenced in it, but it doesn't have to do specifically with Eichel. This is from Flames fan Jeff. I was always under the impression an agent gets paid when a player signs a contract.
That's true.
If that is correct, then what happens when a player like Jack Eichel changes agents? How does a new agent get paid? As I can't imagine they take on a new client for free?
The way it works is, let's just say Jeff is a superstar center in the NHL. Now, I know this is already unbelievable and not plausible.
There are plenty of knock-kneed skaters that have had very, very good careers, Elliot, so I might just have a chance.
Let's just say that Jeff is a 1A center and Amel is his agent, okay? Amel signs Jeff to an 8-year, $80 million contract.
Oh, like where this is going, yeah, continue.
So the regular number for agents on their salaries, and some players negotiated differently with their agents, but the industry standard is 3%. So Amel would get 3% of that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say in the middle, for whatever reason, Jeff decides to change agents,
yeah,
and he comes to me. Technically, the way it works is, they say he keeps Amel for 3 years and then he goes to me for the last five for whatever reason. It doesn't switch.
The agent that did the contract keeps the money.
Now, are things done behind the scenes to make it work, like an hourly wage or a certain payment structure? I don't know the answer to that. But the way the NHLPA works is, when it comes to the actual commission on the contract,
mm-hmm,
it goes to the agent that negotiated the deal.
There you go. Flames fan Jeff, thanks for the question. It's a good one. This is an interesting one. This comes to us from Melissa. Jeff has said a few times on his show he has a lot of hope for the younger generation. I'm curious, do you two have young people working for you that have your ear to make sure you surround yourself with these important points of view?
How old are you, Amel?
35.
Yeah, I mean, Amel is certainly one person. Like, Jeff, you're 51, right? You're not yet 52.
Two. No, 52.
Okay, so you are 52, and I'm 51. Amel, I think, generally is one of those, 35, but a lot of young people would probably call him a geezer, too, at that age.
You got how many wisdom, are you noticing any wisdom hairs coming in, Amel, since you became a dad, by the way?
So many.
Welcome to it, bud.
You know, like, I'll give someone an example here, okay? So there was a person who blocked me on Twitter once, okay? And I had to refer to them when it came to something. So I asked someone who's in my orbit, who's a little bit younger, what do I do about this? And they said to me, you do not refer to them. You respect the block. If they've blocked you, you respect the block. So I said, okay. And I never mentioned them because I was told that the proper etiquette is you respect the block. And I think that's what I try to do. I think, like, I always try to treat people right. You know, people may think I fail in that. People might think I don't do that. That's fine. Everybody's entitled to your opinion. But my default is I try to treat people right. And I find if you usually do that, it works out well. But there are some occasions where I will go to someone who's younger, even younger than Amel, and say, what is the proper etiquette when it comes to this? And that situation where I was blocked was one of them.
Hmm.
You?
One of my guiding principles in life in general is to unlearn something daily. I try to go about my life about unlearning things that I have learned in the past. And I find the best way to do that is to talk to younger people. And in my circle of daily calls and texts and DMs and cups of coffee and, you know, workout buddies, there's a lot of people in their 20s that I communicate with on a consistent basis. Because to me, that helps me unlearn a lot of the things that I think I know. Because things are always changing and there's no other way. Like, if I talk to someone my own age, I'm just going to get the exact same conversation that I've had with people my entire life. There's not going to be a whole lot of new ways to look at things with those conversations. In a lot of these cases, because I'm sure you get the same thing too, whether it's by direct message mainly, it's, hey, can I get 5 minutes of your time to talk about your industry or what you do? I'm hoping to do the same thing. You know, usually I'm pretty eager to have those conversations with people because I end up learning more. I like to challenge people that I talk to by asking them about all the assumptions that I have, not just of, you know, for the purposes of this podcast, hockey, but other things as well. And I find that's one of the ways that keeps me in a mind frame of unlearning something daily. And listen, swallow the ego and not think that you know everything. I think that's part of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I keep an orbit of, it sounds so weird, I keep a cabal or something like that. It sounds so weird. I just talk to a lot of younger people because there's a lot of value in there because that's where all the new ideas are. Seriously, like one of my biggest fears is that I become one of those people that, you know, when I first broke into the industry, we said, this person hasn't changed their mind in 20 years and they're not about to now. I'm terrified of being that person that's completely fixed on their ideas and their mindset and completely incapable of changing. If I ever become that person, just honestly, Amel, Elliot, tell me and I will leave. At that point, I have no business being around.
Yeah, I just think I remember like when I was 20 and people who were older saying, I can't keep up with all the changes and thinking how stupid that was. And now that I'm 50 and everybody else is 20, you can't keep up with all of the changes. Like there are certain things now that are conventional that I never would have thought of. And you just got to make sure you don't trip over them. Because like I said, I see a lot of people who offend without meaning to offend.
Yeah.
So you just got to be smart about it.
Last one for the podcast today. This from Derek. I just became a scout for a junior A team in my hometown. Congratulations, Derek. Well done. And would love to get my hands on some quality literature. Are there any books by former NHL scouts? And if so, are there any that you recommend?
Books for scouts?
Yeah. There's one that comes to my mind right away that I read when it came out. This would have been around 2011 or 2012. And that's called The Art of Scouting by Shane Malloy.
Garrett Joyce's book on scouting was really good. What was that? Future Greats and Heartbreaks?
And Heartbreaks, yeah. Some good stories in there. I think a lot of that revolved around the Eric Johnson draft.
It's Michael Lombardi's book on Bill Belichick and Bill Walsh working for them. Hold on. Because the one thing that he talks about in that book is he talks about identifying what is important to your organization and becoming really good at looking for that.
Hmm.
Like he talked about in the NFL, there were some teams that really valued a certain kind of player and they always became really good at finding that kind of player. And then, of course, there would be situations where you'd say, well, maybe this kind of player doesn't fit what we normally look for, but I'm going to fight like hell for him anyway. His book is called Gridiron Genius. And in there, he does talk about how Bill Walsh and Bill Parcells like certain kind of players. And so he or the other scouts with him would target those players, because he knew that their coaches were committed to those skills. You could find a player that wasn't good in a lot of things or wasn't ideal in a lot of things, but he could do something really well that your organization valued.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a very good piece of advice.
As you were talking and I was ignoring you, as you do with me, I pulled Malloy's book off my shelf. The Art of Scouting by Shane Malloy, How the Hockey Experts Really Watch the Game and Decide Who Makes It. And it's, you know, what to look for, you know, on face-offs, puck skills, puck movement. Well, you know, what types of things scouts look for. This section here, a couple of sections with some words of advice from various scouts around the globe. It's a really interesting read. Like if you're looking for something, Derek, that's hockey specific, I would go with The Art of Scouting by Shane Malloy. Absolutely. Anything else to add, Elliot, before we wrap this one up? Anything you're looking forward to this week?
Not really. I can't think of anything else.
Very well, then we'll close with this. Taking us out, Elliot, a West Coast artist who's been part of the Canadian music scene for a long time. J.P. Maurice just dropped his fifth full-length record where he evolved his sound with sweeping melodies using his powerful vocal range. From Pressure Makes Diamonds, here's J.P. Maurice with Runaway on 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
You think you make the rules? You got your finger on that trigger, but you can't quite remember who you're shooting.
so.